Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
From the Hall of Fame legends to some of the most debated busts in gridiron history, the 7th overall pick in the NFL draft occupies some of the most unique and storied space. But what does the data tell us about what the hit rate of this specific slot do? Well, today we're digging into the NFL draft archives to explore players who redefined this position and teams that gambled at all. Now, joining us is sports historian Ed Cleese to break down the legacy, the legends, and the football history of the number 7 selection. Let's head into the gridiron. You're in the pig pen, and Pigskin Dispatch's 32-day drive into the greatest picks in NFL history. Now, here's our guest, Ed Cleese.
Hey, Darren, how are you today?
I am doing super, Ed. You know, talking about all this history is really getting me juiced up here for the NFL draft. And it's in Western Pennsylvania. Everybody's getting stoked for this. And, you know, the future, your team is getting built here this coming week.
1 week away. And my team this year has the 7th pick in the draft. So I've been paying keen attention to the research I've been doing on the number 7 pick, trying to find out which commander will be wearing a gold jacket someday.
Oh, all right. So they're going to be on the Wide World of Sports from ABC. So, okay, that's nice. Nice.
Aging yourself there, Darren.
Okay. The agony of defeat.
Yes. But,
all right, Ed. Well, let's get some thoughts in what you think about the history of slot number 7 and the 7th pick in the draft.
Sure. This one, I thought separating the top guys was really easy. There was a very large middle ground. When I looked at the 7th pick, I didn't find a lot of egregious errors. And I thought there weren't that many like super duper tippy top guys. So there's like a big sea of like, okay, anywhere from like a little bit disappointing to pretty good player. There was a lot of guys like that. It's been decent the last few years. Okay. Nothing special. Penei Sewell. How do you say his name? I can never say it right.
Penei Sewell, I think, is how you say it.
Well, he's a standout offensive lineman. He's one of the best offensive linemen in the league. He's probably on a Hall of Fame track right now, I would say, most likely. Mm-hmm. But that's about it for recent. We like to talk about quarterbacks. This has not been we'll talk about one in my top five, maybe, but there hasn't been a great run. Byron Leftwich in 2003, okay, kind of a short career, okay, had some moments, has been a successful assistant coach so far in the league. And then two guys. So Andre Ware was taken in 1990 by the Lions, Todd Blackledge in 1983 by the Chiefs. Ware had 3 career wins. Blackledge never had more than 8 starts in a season. He did finish his career with your Steelers. But what's interesting about both Ware and Blackledge is they've had very successful media careers. Ware's been calling college games for a very long time, and Blackledge has been one of the top college analysts, like it feels like for 30 years. Like he feels like he's been around forever. So they made careers in football, just not as quarterbacks.
Yeah, Blackledge was played on those Penn State teams of Joe Paterno that were known for running the ball, but he was like one of the first good throwing quarterbacks for Penn State. So that's where he sort of made his name and had a decent career, had, like you said, ended with the Steelers, but had some good years with the Chiefs. But Byron Leftwich also ended his career, I believe, as a Steeler. And right. Maybe went to Tampa Bay, played a little bit of quarterback down there too. But he backed up Ben Roethlisberger, and they were opponents in the MAC when they were in college, Roethlisberger and Leftwich.
That's right. That's right. Because yeah. Leftwich was Marshall, correct?
Yep. Right, right.
Yep. And then we've had a few other misses that kind of stood out a little bit. Cedric Ellis was a defensive lineman for the Saints in 2008 that did almost nothing in his career. You'll remember this one, Tim Worley, a running back, a very highly touted running back taken by the Steelers that just did not pan out. That did not work out for them one bit.
Yeah, everybody thought maybe he'd be the next Franco Harris, you know.
He was Steelers. Not.
Yeah, he was not. No, not at all. Not even
and
close.
Then this one kind of was because it was a name I didn't recognize. Ben Brian Joswiak. Brian Joswiak. 1986 was taken by the Chiefs. He was a guard. And he had three career starts in his career. Mm. And so what my thing about that is if you're going to take an interior lineman with the seventh pick in the draft, like you would think that the floor would be decent. You know, like if we miss on this, he'll be an okay player. Not he won't be able to play at all in the NFL. I'm not sure how I can see, you know, when teams reach for a quarterback or a receiver or a running back because they're kind of desperate and like a guy's got big numbers in college, you take a chance and it doesn't work out. But like a guard, it's like, gosh, how do you miss that badly? I'm not sure what old Brian's doing now, but it didn't work out for him or the Chiefs.
Let's take a break for a moment to tell you about a new product so that you can take and put your football knowledge that we feed you each and every day to the test. It is the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. You're the quarterback. You call the shots, choose your play, grind it out with a run, pick up steady gains on a short pass, or risk it all with a long pass for a massive chunk of yardage. It isn't just a quiz. It's a march for glory. It's the Pigskin Trivia Drive. Remember, when the huddle's over, when you pick your play, the faster you answer, the more yards you gain. Hesitation is the enemy of the end zone. Keep those chains moving. Cross that yellow line to reset your downs and earn a critical audible. Stuck on a tough defensive look? Use those audibles to strip away two wrong answers and find your open receiver. Watch the play clock. You've got just 25 seconds to make the read. Take too long, and it's a 5-yard penalty for delay of game. It's game action. In this stadium, your brain is the engine, but the clock is the opponent. The mission is simple. Score as many touchdowns as possible in 5 minutes. And when the clock hits zero, your score hits the global leaderboard. Are you a bench warmer or a Hall of Famer? Step up to the line. Your drive starts now on pigskindispatch.com, the Trivia Drive. Don't let your football history knowledge go to waste. Try the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. And now let's get back into our program.
We do have a lot of honorable mentions, though, that are much happier. Not a lot, actually. I've got two to talk about briefly, and then one that we probably really need to get into. Troy Vincent of 1992 was taken by the Dolphins, I believe, and then bounced around a little bit. Was really nice defensive back. Really, mm-hmm. really good player.
Yeah,
and then the Jaguars, Josh Allen, was taken in 2018, and he's having a really nice run. He's been a pretty big hit, I would say. He was changed his name now. The Josh
Hines out. Yeah, okay. Hines, all right.
The other Josh Allen. And then
he was actually 2019.
The other Josh Allen was 2018. Sorry about that. Sorry about that. 2019. So I've got this one's going to probably surprise you that he's not in my top five. I have Sterling Sharp taken in 1988 on my honorable mention list.
Wow.
I don't think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I think we make an exception for him that we are not making for everybody else. Let me start with this. His last 3 years in the NFL, it was insane, his numbers. It was crazy. He led the league in catches three times in his career. He had insane numbers those last 3 years. I think in his last year, he had 18 touchdowns. That is phenomenal. He was absolutely a Hall of Fame level talent and was producing at a Hall of Fame pace for sure. But his career ended after 7 years. He is 113th all time in receiving yards. He is 100th in catches. He just didn't do it long enough for me to say that he is Canton worthy. I think he is a guy that got in based on lobbying mostly. You know, his brother was in the media, people lobbied for him. I think there was this feeling of, hey, this guy was clearly a Hall of Fame caliber player. So let's put him in the Hall of Fame. But if we do that, Darren, then that list is very long. We've talked, you and I have talked in this countdown about a number of guys that had really good bursts and their careers ended short because of injury or early retirement or, you know, whatever it might be. And they're probably not going to get to Canton because of it. We've made an exception for Sterling Sharp for some reason, but we're not making for a lot of other players.
I think there's been some other examples of that. I mean, Terrell Davis comes to mind, who didn't have a great longevity, but, you know, similar to Sharp, he had a, you know, a handful of years that were exceptional. And, you know, he was probably one of the best at his position at that time. And I think you could say that same thing for Sharp. So I think that would be part of the argument for why he is in. You know, is it fair to some guys that had lengthier careers, you know, 9, 10, 14 year careers that have the numbers that are in the top 10? You know, I can't think of any examples of that right now, but, you know, they're up there, you know, in the top, maybe top 25 and are in the Hall of Fame. Maybe there's some argument for that, but I think he was one of the best players of his time. And I think he had some injury issues, much like Terrell Davis. And I think
it was his neck.
Yeah. So that there was some exception taken there because he probably would have put those numbers up if he would have stayed hooked up with Favre for, you know, a better amount of time.
I'm sure he would have, but he didn't. So, you know, if we, like I say, if we project for him, I'm not a big fan of Davis, Terrell Davis being the Hall of Fame either. I have a similar argument for him. But anyway, yeah. So I would say that, you know, I guess it all depends on how you weigh the scales, but for me, just not enough.
Okay. All right. So he's not in your top five. So are you ready to discuss your top
five? I am ready to discuss my top five. We'll start with number five, of course. I've got Bryant Young, taken in 1994, defensive tackle by the 49ers. He is in the Hall of Fame. He was durable. He played all 14 of his seasons with the 49ers, 89.5 career sacks, which from the interior we've talked about a lot is a big deal. When you're collapsing, he was very good against the run, but he also collapsed the pocket. So he's sort of doing everything you're supposed to do on that interior defensive line. He was on the Super Bowl. They won the Super Bowl his rookie year. So he was part of the 94 49ers and then part of like the mid to late 90s, Jeff Garcia, some of those teams where they were good but not great. And then he did go through kind of like the rebuilding years as well before his career ended. He is on the all-90s team of the decade. He is in Canton. I don't think that I would rank him. He doesn't necessarily come to mind when I think of like the Aaron Donalds or even like the Warren Sapps that we've talked about in the past is like this all time dominant defensive tackle. But I do think his career was good enough to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I mean, very solid player, very well respected, gold jacket and a bust in Canton. Yeah. So good guy. Right. So who do you have next?
Number four is a current 49er, but that sounds almost weird to say. And he's still playing. And that is Mike Evans, taken in 2014 by the Bucs. He is almost the exact opposite of Sterling Sharp in a lot of ways, because you could maybe say that no one season has stuck out that much for Mike Evans, where he's been a little bit more of a volume player. But the 11 straight 1,000-yard receiving seasons kind of blows my mind. Because that is 11 straight. That is incredible consistency.
Some of them with injury plague seasons.
Some of them when he was injured, not all of them with great quarterbacks. They've kind of like hit and missed in his career at quarterback. Obviously, they hit big time when they had Brady, and they've been pretty good with Baker. But, you know, there was not always that way, especially early in his career. He's in the top 10 all time in receiving touchdowns now. There are many, 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 many Hall of Famers behind him on that list. He is likely going to catch Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates on the all-time touchdown list. And I think he's got a shot at Larry Fitzgerald as well. So you start adding all that up. He's still playing. And I do, and he's been a pretty money player. You know, he was really good when they won the Super Bowl, and he's been good whenever he's played in big games. So Mike Evans, I think, is I'm happy to put him here. He will be in the Hall of Fame someday as well.
It's going to be interesting when we talk about him this season being in that offense of San Francisco, because he might be the guy, because
yeah,
I don't know that they really didn't have all the receivers the last couple of years, and he stays healthy. Yeah, he could be truly a weapon with Christian McCaffrey, who we talked about a couple of nights ago.
And his streak did end this past year when he was just too injured. So you just never know. Maybe that was it. Maybe he's reached the end of his road and he's not going to be able to stay healthy and produce anymore. But maybe he bounces back under this, he probably only needs a year or two to move up that list even more than he is now.
Yeah, probably all depends on, health of like Kittle and some things like that might take some coverage off of him.
Yep.
All right. Who do you have next?
Another Hall of Famer, number three, Champ Bailey, corner, taken in 1999 by the Washington Redskins. Kind of funny. So he played 5 years in Washington. I actually always felt he was a tad overrated when he was with us. Of course, I liked him, kind of loved him. He was, a very good player, excellent draft pick, of course. He had a little bit of a tendency to get burned in big spots. He would give up some big plays. And having grown up with Darryl Green, who was still there, by the way, when they drafted Champ and mentored him a little bit, for 4 years they played together, I wasn't really used to that. I was sort of used to the corner just shuts down that side of the field. And Champ would sometimes get beat. But he also is the all-time leader in the NFL history in passes defended. So he made a lot of plays. And then when he was traded to Denver for Clinton Portis, honestly, a trade that worked out pretty well for both teams, to be fair. And he was better in Denver. He was better in Denver. He got better. He was a really good player in Washington, I thought, with some flaws. And then he was three straight first-team All-Pros in Denver. He led the league in interceptions 1 year. Like I said, he's the all-time leader in passes defended. He was still good at the end of his career. He had two Pro Bowls in his mid-30s in Denver. He also has a statistical anomaly. It was the divisional playoffs against the Patriots in 2005 in Denver. And it was 10-6 Broncos midway, kind of late in the third quarter. And Brady was driving. So you usually know what that means, right? It's going to be a Patriots W. But Champ picked him off. And what's kind of like funny about this is Champ returned at 100 yards, but did not score a touchdown. He intercepted it like inside the one, like the negative one, returned it to the other one and got tackled at the 1 yard line.
Oh, geez.
So he had a 100-yard interception return, but did not score a touchdown, which is kind of funny there. But that basically shifted that game. That went from it looked like the Patriots were about to take the lead to now the Broncos are up by 11. And the Broncos did win that game, a fairly rare Tom Brady AFC playoff loss that kind of shifted on a play by Champ Bailey. I do not consider Champ to be in like that top five all-time corners that we talked about, Woodson and Green and Lester Hayes, that kind of, I don't really think he's there, but absolutely a Canton guy. What a cool name. Well, one heck of a pick by my Redskins who didn't make a whole lot during that era.
It's interesting. You talked the other night about Dante Hall and you almost said the same words that you talked about Champ Bailey.
D'Angelo.
It sounded almost like you were more fond of Dante Hall as a Redskin.
D'Angelo. D'Angelo. No, I mean, Champ was absolutely a better player than D'Angelo Hall. Don't mistake that. D'Angelo Hall was a little better than people gave him credit for, and I thought maybe Champ was not quite as good as people gave him credit for. That doesn't mean that I thought D. Hall was better than Champ, because he was not.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure that was clear because I was going to argue that with
gotcha.
You. Okay. Who do you have next?
Next, I've got a legendary Sooner, my all-time favorite player to ever watch play college football, and he's going to be up there in the NFL too.
Wait a second. I don't even see Bosworth on this list. What's going on here?
That would just be a college list.
Oh, okay.
Number two is all day, Adrian Peterson, taken in 2007 by the Vikings running back. Adrian Peterson was that rare stop in your tracks. Who is that? Must watch, must see. At the very back end of that, the running back position, I think in the history of the NFL, probably has the most lore behind it. Something's like the most revered when you talk about the names, and people talk about Jim Brown and Barry Sanders and Walter Payton and Emmitt Smith and Zonka and Jim Taylor, even going all the way back to like Red Grange, and there's like this running back aura that we don't really have so much anymore. And I think everybody thought it stand for Adrian. No, it stands for all day. And all you back in OU, there was these crimson shirts that just said all day on them. And that was an homage to AP. But I digress. I think Adrian was like maybe one of the last of the legendary kind of mythic almost running backs in the league. He was phenomenal. I don't think I can rattle off all his stats or whatever, but he's fifth all time in yards. So big deal. He had 122 touchdowns. Fifth all time in yards, fifth all time in touchdowns. In the biggest game he ever played, which would have been the 2009 NFC Championship game in New Orleans, the game that Favre blew at the end with this sort of unbelievably bad interception.
Mm-hmm.
Peterson had 122 yards rushing and three touchdowns in that game. So somebody came to play that day, and it was Adrian. And I think you could kind of always count on him. He had that famous run in Pittsburgh where he's just running people over like a Mack truck. Sort of that awesome combination of size and power and speed and just could do it all. A really pure running back. Didn't catch the ball that much. It was just sort of that pure back. Even with my Redskins at the very end, he played the last 2 years. They were the Redskins for bad teams. He had almost 1,000 yards in each of those years. It's almost like he just, rolled out of bed in the morning and could get you 100. He was awesome.
Yeah, it seemed like he kept coming back too. He was playing for somebody every year. He might still be playing this year. Who knows?
I think the records really mattered to him. Like, I think he wanted to be on those lists. I think he wanted to get – I think at one point there was a lot of rumor that he really wanted to try to catch Emmitt. That was never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But he is in the top five. And like we talk about now with the way running backs are used, that seems to get safer by the year of other people catching you.
Yeah, I think one of the most amazing facts about him is, his recovery time. He tore that ACL he tore?
Yes.
And he came back like in 9 months or something, which was unheard of at the time. And he played well, didn't play poorly, played well coming back from it, which is remarkable.
Purple Jesus.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, so who do you have before him?
Okay, number one. I'm going to just roll with this. Anybody that wants to step to me on this one to argue, bring it. Because number one, I didn't waffle on. I didn't hesitate one bit. It's easy. Number one is Josh Allen, the quarterback, Josh Allen, taken in 2018 by the Buffalo Bills. Darren, he's awesome. He's one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen. I do not put some of the postseason losses on him. This last one in Denver this past season, you can probably throw a little bit of criticism his way for the really bad fumble before the half and then missing the play that would have pretty much won the game or at least given him the lead there late. But put that on this hand, put all the other stuff in the other hand, and it's not even close. We're talking about an all-timer here.
Leg ripped off earlier in that game too, and still had a great game after that.
This blows my mind, Darren. He has 79 rushing touchdowns in his career. He's 23rd all time in the NFL all time rushing touchdowns list. Like, that's crazy. There's like Hall of Fame running backs that didn't get in the end zone as much as Josh Allen has with his feet. And he has 220 passing touchdowns already too. The dude is unreal. And his stat sheet, when you go to Pro Football Reference, it almost looks like they made a mistake. It looks like they copy and pasted each year onto the next one. They're all the same. He doesn't miss games. He throws for a gazillion yards. He rushes for like 800 yards a year. He runs for like 10 touchdowns a year. He throws for like 30 touchdowns a year. And then beyond all that, you watch him and you're like, this guy is a maniac. I mean, he's my favorite player to watch in the NFL, period. He's like an inspirational kind of guy to watch. He's phenomenal. What he did in the playoff, the 13-second game in Kansas City, you know, there's nothing else you can do. There's nothing else you can do. He was perfect. He gave the ball back to Mahomes with 13 seconds left. You got to win that game. He never got the ball back again in overtime. If he did, they probably would have won. Because he is incredible. We saw him in the playoff game in Jacksonville this year, get it done late. He is incredible. I think he's obviously, if we're going to talk about him with Montana and Brady, he's going to have to get at least one ring. He's going to have to get the Super Bowl. That, you know, it's going to be a hard argument if he never does. But I'm not so enamored with that I can't see who he is and what kind of player he is. And that, to be perfectly honest, the Bills haven't done a great job of helping him. No. He is, you know, they're not a bad roster. They've got some players, but they have not surrounded him with too many guys that can take the pressure off of him on either side of the ball. He's number one on this list. He's going to just solidify that over the years. And I don't think there's an argument.
No, I agree with you. He definitely should be number one on the list for these players that we've talked about. Probably, you know, in his defense, Buffalo would have just sucked up their pride a little bit and went and re-signed Diggs before he became a Patriot, that might have been the magic. He needed another receiver. They just didn't have it. You know, if they were trying to go with Shakir and some of the other guys they had, but they needed that guy like a Diggs who definitely has been missing from the combination they have up there.
They don't do a ton in free agency. They haven't drafted all that well. Their defenses have been kind of hit and miss. They've been okay. It's certainly never dominant. You know, he hasn't had a lot of games where he can win, you know, 13 to 10. He doesn't have a lot of margin for error to have a bad day or, you know, make a big mistake. And that becomes a lot of load to bear, and he bears it really well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what he does this year with the shakeup and coaching and players on the roster. But it is his offensive coordinator, I believe, that took over as coach.
Yes, so some familiarity.
Oh, right. All right. Well, that's a great top five pick. Great pick at number one. We have some interesting facts here for number seven. If you're wondering, you said Washington's picking number seven this year. Might be wondering what position maybe they go to. Well, the trend says wide receiver, which is the most popular position drafted in the number seven in the first 90 drafts. There's been a total of 5 Hall of Famers. We've talked about a few of them here. Actually, 3 of them you've talked about. Probably Allen will be a fourth. But we did have Chuck Howley, 1958, was drafted by the Chicago Bears, who ended up, 58, 59, and 60. That Chicago drafted the 7th spot all 3 of those years in a row, which is kind of interesting. And Bulldog Turner, Clyde Bulldog Turner, was drafted in 1940 by the Chicago Bears as their center and middle of their defense too. So a couple other names to note too are not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but Johnny Lattner was a Heisman winner, drafted by Pittsburgh in 1954, and Mel Farr, running back, was drafted in 1967 by the Detroit Lions. Mike Pruitt of the Browns was drafted in 1976. So some good running backs there to talk about, and some great players overall. And that takes us to our draft fact of the day. So, we know how, we're normally anticipating here in a week that we call mostly college age players will be drafted, guys in their early 20s, maybe 22, 23. But that's what they're normally taken. But there have been two college seasons before. You need to have at least two college seasons of your high school graduating class before you can be eligible for the draft. So who do you think, and what was the age of the youngest player ever taken in the NFL draft?
I'm going to say we're going way back. So I'm going to say he was 17.
Well, no, there hasn't ever been anybody 17 drafted. 19 okay. is the youngest, and it's fairly recent. In 2007, the Houston Texans took, and I'm going to probably butcher his name, Amobi Okoye, defensive yep. tackle out of Louisville. And okay. somebody could say, how could he be 19 and do that? Well, he was of Nigerian descent. That's where he grew up at. And he ended up attending Louisville, played for them for 4 years, and was drafted at the age of 19.
Wow.
So, kind of a remarkable young man to be able to go through his high school years and go into college here in the States and play 4 years of football as well in college. So that's our draft out of date, kind of an odd one. And not sure that we'll ever see somebody 19 again coming in. Maurice Clarett was probably very upset about that, but what are you going to do? Yep. So, all right. Well, that wraps up our pick number 7 and our 7th day before the draft. Tune in tomorrow. Ed will join us again to talk about the 6th spot. Ed, we'll talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.